Welcome to Coming From Experience, my virtual campfire where we can all gather round and share our experiences through this little thing called life. I'm your host, Annalise, and I'm here to bring you the raddest people I've come to know, sharing their stories of growth, evolution, and their unique take on universal experiences. The stories and experiences I bring to you in this podcast will span a wide variety of topics, from career changes to motherhood, personal development, spirituality, growth in relationship, health and wellness, and so much more. I hope that these stories inspire you and open up a portal for deep connection and conversation on topics that would otherwise be left untouched. Let's dive in. Finding what you had in mind. Today on the podcast, I'm joined by Brittany Eastman, who is a personal friend of mine, a mentor even, and to be honest, she's just an outright, absolutely fantastic human being. Now, Brittany really started the career that she's in now 10 months ago with human design. And while we don't really go into the depths of human design in this podcast, there are plenty that I will link to in the show notes, but we do talk about human design and how it can really help us lean into our authenticity and how it can really have an impact on who we are as people and how we interact with one another. Brittany is also a pioneer for authenticity and becoming more authentic and how being authentic is our hub of creativity and how we can really move forward in our life. We talk a lot about Brittany's own experience. I love her story about where she came from in terms of getting to where she is today. You know, there was a pivotal 10 months, but there was really 10 years leading up to that that really influenced the person that she is. And I think a lot of you will come to really be in awe of her experience and her journey to get where she is today. We talk a lot about business and the self and enterprise, and it's honestly just an awesome conversation. So I'm going to stop talking and let's get to the podcast. Welcome, Brittany, to the podcast. I'm so excited to have you here as our first guest. Honored, in fact.
I feel honored. Oh, I don't think I've ever been the first guest on someone's podcast before.
Really? Well, there you go.
First time. I think so. And if I have, it's a surprise.
You're like, didn't know that.
So honored. Did not know that.
Yeah. Now, I know we've spoken about this before. We don't love the question of what do you do for work? It's a shitty one. So instead, I wanted to ask the question, how do you spend your day? What does your day look like? What do you love feeling?
That is good. That is a good question.
Okay.
You should have claimed that one. Okay. So how do I spend my day? Well, I have twin 3-year-old daughters. So I spend the first portion of my day wrangling them. Mm-hmm. From very early in the morning, there's often a coffee in tow and having breakfast with my babies and getting them all ready to go for preschool. Usually drive them into preschool and treat myself to a second beverage.
Sometimes coffee, not always.
Sometimes coffee, not always. Sometimes cacao. Yeah, nice. Something yummy. Mm. And then make my way home. And I usually spend that time on the way home learning. Mm-hmm. I love learning. So learning is like my love language.
Yep.
And usually it's a podcast or some sort of, usually I'm studying something as well. So I'm learning on the go, get home. And honestly, I will pretty quickly hook into my day. My day includes mentor calls, creating some medicine and magic to intertwine into my courses and my programs and my work and whatever I'm doing at the time. Sometimes record a podcast and spend most of my day doing that while my kiddies are at preschool. Love doing a workout, getting out in nature. That is absolutely imperative in my day. I need rays on my face. Mm. I need wind in my hair and I absolutely need to be around some greenery. I want my feet on the earth. I want to really connect in to my body. And yeah. I think that's like movement to me is so important, not because I really give a shit about being like hyper fit or anything like that. Yeah. I don't know, I feel like it's a real connection tool for me to just feel into my body and what kind of exercise do I feel like. And it always mimics what's going on emotionally for me. And, you know, sometimes I want to move slowly and sometimes I want to just sweat.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's always, it, I don't know, it kind of informs me of how I'm feeling and helps to kind of shift that out from my body. And yeah, doing that.
Nice.
I don't know. I always have a moment of contemplation, introspection. I'm a real
thinker, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm such a thinker. I was gonna say a loner.
No. Part-time loner.
I really like having time to myself, by myself, to really tune into my own stuff. I feel like a lot of my ideas live at the very end of my introspection. So I kind of need to carve out a lot of time to actually allow myself to get to that point. So any sort of like deep sacred aloneness is really beautiful for me. So always trying to fit that in. And then the rest of the day is just dedicated to family time, connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hanging with my babes. Sometimes a movie night, hang with Rory, nice, yummy dinner.
Mm.
And that's my day.
Sounds beautifully balanced.
Most of the time. Good.
Yeah. That's what we're aiming for, right?
I mean, that is a pretty standard day around here. Yeah. But I mean, of course, there are days where I'm in what I'm doing work-wise, and sometimes I'm off what I'm doing work-wise, and then family time picks up and all of that. So it's pretty balanced.
Yeah, that's good. And I know most people that know you and know your work know you as the human design girl, which I think is so limiting to who you are and what you do. And you've even touched on this on your own social media, is that that's a jumping off point. Like that's a base level point. But I'd love for you to talk about your human design type. I'm so curious. I know we often will Google people that we see on Netflix shows and the like. So I'd love for you to just touch on your design and
Yes. So thank you for telling everyone that I'm a very low-key nerd. Spend my Saturday nights Googling celebrities and their
right there with you.
Oh, funny. So I'm a 4-6 self-projected projector. This has been a really freeing thing for me to learn. And as you said, it's just a starting point for me. I really reject the notion that I'm the human design girl, but I know a lot about it.
Yeah.
I love it. I think it's a beautiful way to connect into who I inherently am. And I know I've worked with thousands of people now who have had that same experience of just knowing themselves deeper for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think anything that can do that for you, whatever that is for you, whether that's astrology, human design, quantum physics, nutrition, like whatever the fuck is your thing. I think as long as it helps you know yourself in a more intimate and intricate way, then it's beautiful. And it did that for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really helped me lean into this self-projected component of me, which is all about expression, identity, really kind of unlocking my throat.
Yes.
And allowing myself to stand in that. And that's a lot of what I work in now. I always say there are five pillars to my business: energetics, authenticity, originality, expression, and impetus. Yeah. And these five elements really underpin everything that I do, but always the starting point is that energetic component. And a lot of that comes from human design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to be, well, you choose your own luck, but I was one of the people that was part of your human design reader training. And I know for me, it has been equally as freeing, sometimes confronting and overwhelming, because there's a lot that you want to not own about yourself and you don't want to believe to be true. But, I completely agree. I think like anything in this life, you just pick up what fits, what suits, and run with it and see where it takes you.
And I think that takes so much courage.
Mm.
I really genuinely do. I think so many people are like, oh, that interests me. That piques my curiosity.
Yeah.
That looks spectacular.
Yeah.
However, that's not acceptable. That's not the way I do things. That doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it actually, as you said, you create your own luck.
Yeah.
I think it's actually courage. Mm. When you find something where there's a resonance, even if it's a little weird, a little off kilter, maybe not 100% what you would normally do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it takes such a courage to do that.
Yeah. I agree. Now, you've already touched on, through your pillars, some of the key things I really want to chat with you about, predominantly energetics, like authenticity, all the fun stuff. It's really funny. I bought Joe Dispenza's book.
Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself.
Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. I bought it a few years ago, and it was at a time where I was like a pretty anxious person. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading it and just putting it down and being like, I am not ready. I'm not ready to receive this information yet. Yeah. Going back on the bookshelf, it's been beside my bed for months, and I picked it up last night and I was like, I think I'm ready for you now. Like, I really think I'm ready. Mm. And like within the first chapter, just talking about, and these are things, concepts I learned when I was studying nutrition about the atom and what we perceive the atom to look like and how it doesn't look like what we thought and how matter is essentially energy. Mm-hmm. And it made me realize, I was like, why do I go down the like energy is woo-woo and energy is like esoteric? And, you know, when really it's rooted in science. And I know he does talk a lot about that in the quantum field realm side of things. So definitely want to dive into that conversation. But I guess for anyone that's curious, I'm also a projector and I love connecting with other projectors because they're so rare. There's such a resonance there.
So much resonance.
Maybe rare to me because I grew up in a family of MGs and generators.
Mine are all manifestors. Like mum, like dad and brother are manifestors and my mom is a generator. So I get you.
Yes. And it's just like, you kind of can then step back and go, ah, that's why you kind of never got me or we just weren't on the same page, especially for people that perhaps don't know about it. And I love my mum. She's the most curious person and would let me talk to her about human design before anyone else, like, and was so open to receiving it. And I was like, you're the best. But yeah, so I'm a projector. I'm a 4-6 like you, and I have the emotional authority, which for me, I was like, great. I already know that. I'm super emotional. Now I can actually like harness it in a really beautiful way, which is something you teach so brilliantly and really.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's like, that rocked my world and my relationship. I think just emotional cognizance, you know, becoming aware of, I know you term it communicative bidding and I kind of term it emotional default mode, but it is that notion of like inbuilt habits.
So that's like, what are the ways that we just lean on when we get uncomfortable?
Yes. Which is often, hey, we're often very uncomfortable.
And I mean, depending on your experience of life, your energetic threshold is always going to be at a different point. It might be 2 centimeters outside of where you are right now, or it might be, you know, ages away where you have a really big threshold where you can withstand lots of discomfort and you're happy navigating that. But I think for the most part, we've learned really, really great strategies of avoiding avoiding our discomfort. So we create lots of emotional defaults where we avoid, shut down, get quiet, withhold, reject, blame, judge, cold shoulder, silent treatment, eye roll. Like, we do all of these things because our threshold's right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, our job is actually to bear witness to those things and kind of pull them into light, be like, wow, I'm doing that because I'm uncomfortable, discuss that, talk about that, and actually be the impetus to your own expansion of your own energetic threshold. And I think there's so much power in that.
Yeah, totally.
And I always say this to people, like, your authenticity is going to be the most controversial thing you can do in your life. So if you want to be yourself, get good at confrontation, don't avoid it. Yeah. And the way that you do that is expanding that energetic threshold. So I think it's, such an important thing.
Totally. Now let's get into authenticity because in human design, I know we talk about energetic correctness and kind of moving beyond that point into authenticity. And so I'd love for you to kind of just share your perspective on authenticity, what that means, the challenge around that, what needs to kind of happen to step into that place essentially.
Yeah. So I guess I'd start with a definition of like what I see authenticity as. And the way I describe it usually is removing every shred of everyone else from yourselves. So you are left standing as the raw you. So all of those times in your life where you've taken on a behavior or a trait or a mannerism or an expression or a belief or anything at all where it's kind of entered you either consciously, unconsciously, or by osmosis, however it enters you, being able to remove that. And so to step into that, we actually have to take a look at, where are the places in our life am I perpetuating my in authenticity by being like someone else.
Yeah.
And so to do that, I guess you're looking at all of, from my perspective, where I would begin is looking at the energy centers in human design and say, am I operating from a place of my own true alignment, or am I playing by someone else's rule book? And we do that by kind of dissecting what that energy center is teaching you. So for example, we were just talking about emotional defaults and confrontation and things like that comes from the solar plexus.
Yeah.
So I would say to someone, you know, do you have a hard time stepping into confrontation? Do you have a hard time speaking your truth? Are you good at being honest emotionally about how you're feeling? And if someone says, oh no, I hate confrontation, I'm doing that, I'm like, great. There's an incongruence. Your soul wants you to be healthy there and you're not behaving that way. What are the behaviors? Why do you do that? Where did you learn that? Could you be aware? Could you choose something else?
Mm.
What could you choose? And that's a really simplistic look at that. So there are so many energetics at play. The belief for me is that success, joy, abundance, love, connection, self-generative business, like momentum, all of these really beautiful things, they are predicated on how you can be in every single moment. Mm. So we want to remove all of these perpetuating behaviors and tools and practices that we may have that we have inherited or borrowed or observed from someone else so that we can access all of those things. And when you clear all of that away and you're no longer playing by someone else's rule book and you've actually written your own, you have untouched and infinite access to all of the things that you want.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the general overview from my perspective of authenticity and the role that it plays.
Yeah. And I know you talk about this a lot, but I guess stepping into that place is requiring that level of radical self-honesty, which is something that you really teach. And a lot of people find it hard to sit in that space, to be really honest with themselves, to actually call out the behaviors, to become aware of them, because I think like anything, obviously we know this from 0 to 7, being generous, people talk about 7 to 14, but we're quite absorbent. Like we're little sponges of information, behaviors, whether that is on a conscious or subconscious level, even to the point where preconception, I would argue, like in womb, in utero, like we talk about from a nutritional perspective how the dietary habits of kids are often picked up when they're in the womb from what the mother's having. Like there are things that are felt, heard, sensed in that place as well. And so it's a constant layering. And so there can be this breadth and depth of places that perhaps need to explore or just be brought to the light and then quickly kind of dismantled and moved on.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it can be really challenging. And so you touched on the energy centers, which I think from a human design perspective is super helpful in just becoming aware of the pitfalls and, you know, how you can lean into that energetic correctness and then move into authenticity. And there's three that we often look at for this, right? Like the solar plexus, the spleen and the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love for you to talk about the spleen and the heart as well, because I think so much of that comes up for so many people and I'd love for them to hear that.
Yeah. So also just to backtrack a little bit on the energy centers. Sometimes if people aren't familiar with human design or they're not familiar with any like chakra system, anything, really what it is like a breaking down of your wholeness into 9 overarching elements.
Yeah.
So you might have one that's like your inspiration center, one that's for your mind, one that's for your heart, one that's for your voice, one that's for your emotions. You know, they're just these elements of you. And it's a way to dismantle who you are, to have a look at all of these different components of yourself, to see where you are operating in your own alignment or if you're borrowing stuff. So
yeah,
there are these 3 main elements, the solar plexus, which we've talked about, and then the spleen, which the spleen is so important because it really fuels everything in the body. You know, biologically, as you know, it operates like a washing machine.
Yeah.
It's clearing out the stuff that's not for us and it's keeping and holding on to the things that are. And energetically, it creates the same effect. When we're healthy in our spleen, we're holding on to the things that are sparkly, clean and juicy and they're right for us. Mm. And we're getting rid of all of the things that are not for us.
Yeah.
So when it's healthy, that's what it looks like. We have a willingness to remove things that aren't for us, even if it means going into the unknown.
Yeah.
If we're unhealthy, we're going to hold on to all the things that aren't good for us. Those things can be identities, ideas, beliefs, you know, routines, habits.
People.
People, businesses, and big one, offerings and jobs, yes, even when they make us money.
We both know this.
We both know this. Yes.
Some might be better at removing them than
us. And they shall remain nameless. Yeah. Like it's this really interesting part of us because, you know, energetically, when we look at this, we only have a capacity to hold so much with our current nervous system. It's basically like if you have a storage unit, there are only so many boxes you can fit in there. If you want some brand new shit to drop into that storage unit, you need to remove some of the old boxes so that it can fit in. That's basically how the spleen operates. Yep. So it's going to hold as much as it can hold with your current level of awareness and the current energetic frequency that you're operating on. And when it can't hold anymore, you're going to feel stuck. You're going to feel restless. Mm. You're going to feel bored. And you'd be like, why isn't anything new happening? Like, why will nothing good happen for me? And all it's asking you is to shed that which is no longer needed.
Yeah.
All of the old stuff, you know, and that might be all of those things that I mentioned before. It might be it might be as little as deleting your Facebook account. It might be genuinely just like clearing out your cupboard. Mm. It might be removing a close friend from your life and dismantling that relationship and dissolving that consciously, considerately, compassionately.
Yeah.
You know, it might be any of those things. And the belief is that when we are truly in our correctness with the spleen, we're holding on to exactly what is for us. Mm. And we have gaping holes of magnetism so that it can call in new stuff.
Yeah.
And only then when we have openness in our energetic field can the new stuff drop in.
Yeah.
So the spleen is super important because when we're holding on to stuff that isn't good for us, we're also draining our life force. We're applying our energy to things. We're bored. We're probably exhausting ourselves. Mm-hmm. Our energy is shitty. So it's really fueling so many different elements of our body. It's really important.
It trickles out.
It trickles out hugely. Yeah. And I think, you know, what we're trying to do energetically as people is really maintain our life force and our vitality and our creativity and, you know, our power. And all of that is in direct relationship to our sacral, which has a direct relationship to the spleen. So when our sacral is being leaked out because we can't be clear with what we're holding on to, what we're not, we feel exhausted and burnt out and tired and all of those things and uninspired and whatever.
Yeah. So, and as much as we talk about these as individual entities, it's kind of like, you know, for me with my nutrition mindset, it's like linking the body back and going, oh, well, your heart's your heart and your stomach's your stomach and your lungs, your lungs. Like there is a constant communication that's happening between all parts of the human body. Like there is a connectedness. So
getting
healthy in one area is going to have a trickle effect, but being unhealthy in one area is also going to have a trickle effect too.
100%. And I will say this to people all the time when people are like, oh, I'm just so tired. I'm in energetic incorrectness with my sacral. I'm like, well, don't even bloody worry about the sacral.
Yeah.
Look to the spleen. What are you applying your energy to? Because as soon as you clear that out and you get rid of that, your sacral's free then and it can rise in vitality. Mm. So don't even worry about that.
Yeah.
Don't even worry about your throat.
Yeah.
Worry about your solar plexus because, you know, if you're not speaking up, it's because you're avoiding something and that lives in the solar plexus. So clear that out first. So I honestly think when you are really healthy with the solar plexus, you're really healthy with the spleen and finally the heart.
Yes.
You literally can open up really free channels of communication between all of the elements of your body and they can link up, communicate, chat to each other, connect, and you can be one big cohesive unit that's just operating so connectively.
Yeah.
So the heart.
Yes, the heart.
The heart's a ripper because it is a ripper.
It is.
it houses so much. But to keep it super simple, the biggest things that it houses are worth and value, self-worth, self-value. Yeah. So when we're unhealthy, we're trying to prove our worth. We're trying to prove our value. And that often takes us into behaviors like overgiving, overdoing, overcontributing, taking too much responsibility. You know, we're giving all of our value in the hopes that we prove ourselves as something that's so worthy. So that people see us and adore us and love us because that's all we want. We just want to be loved as ourselves.
Yeah.
But when we're in that state of proving, we're also energetically incorrect. We're saying, I don't believe in my worth. I don't believe in my value. Can you do it for me so that I believe you? And we're really seeking worth from elsewhere.
Yeah.
And it makes us do all of these things, you know, the things, some of the examples that I would give for perpetuating behaviors that really exacerbate our lack of worth are things like free discovery calls, you know, overgiving with content, proving our value, you know, all of the ways, you know, staying back late to pack up the chairs after the meeting, saying, oh, I'll do the late shift. I'll say, don't you worry, you go home. Like, I'll organize the dinner with the girlfriends. I'll bring all the food. Just don't worry about it. Just let me do it. You know, it's this overgiving, this over proving that we're so worthy.
Yeah.
That we actually exhaust ourselves in the process. And the thing is, it's like we get these little fake ego trips.
Yeah.
Because when we are adored or revered for that thing that we're proving ourselves for, you know, you bring all the dinner over, you absolutely exhaust yourself in the process. Everyone's like, oh my God, Brit, you didn't have to do that. That was so kind, just so generous. And I get this little hit for a minute where I'm like, oh my God, I'm worthy. Yeah. And I feel so good about it. And then I go home and I feel no cellular shift because now I just need to do the same thing plus more to get the same reverence.
Mm.
And so it's this, it's a really ugly beast that can really perpetuate itself.
Yeah.
And so our job is to get rid of all of those things that we're doing that perpetuate our lack of worth or our belief in our lack of worth, because our worth is exponential and infinite and it's not going anywhere. It's our belief in it that wavers. So, you know, when we can remove that, I call them worth anchors, things that keep us anchored at the dock so we can't actually grow beyond there. Our belief can't grow. We need to pick up the anchor so that we can actually charge forward with worth.
Yeah.
So you stop offering the free discovery call. You say, no, I can't do that. You get more boundaried. You know, you do all of these things where you preserve who you are and you start showing yourself and building evidence with yourself that your worth actually comes from how much you value your contribution.
Mm.
So you know, when we're healthy with our worth, we're not spewing out our energy. We're not overgiving and overdoing all the things. We're not proving ourselves. We're not holding on to all the things that aren't good for us. We're keeping our energy really clean, clear, and bright. And then with our solar plexus, we're aware of our energetic threshold. We're having the conversations we need to have. We own our voice and our words and our feelings. We are a very healthy being. And everything else really starts to pick up from there. And, you know, everything starts to kind of move into correctness as a result. So they're the three places I begin.
Yeah, totally. And it's funny because as you were saying that, I was kind of at this little epiphany where I was like, well, it's called self-worth for a reason. Like seeking validation outside of ourself is kind of ironic to the notion of it being from within the self.
It is.
It's creating a negative. It really is. Yes. Like, how did that not sink in earlier?
Yeah. And I mean, but it's so funny because we think that to be worthy, other people have to see us as worthy.
No, yeah.
But actually when you step into your worth and you start believing it, you recognize how futile that is anyway.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't care if you think I'm worthy or not. If I don't feel energetically connected to what I'm contributing and doing and being in my life, it doesn't matter how much reverence I'm receiving from outside. It actually doesn't penetrate anyway.
Mm.
If I'm not the one who is in my worth.
Mm.
So we might think that we get these worth hits from outside of us and that when people adore us, we're going to feel good, but it actually doesn't happen anyway.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? It's actually, we're seeking something that doesn't exist.
Yeah. 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 And oftentimes I find that when I am well received by others, I often stand in my own self and I'm like, yeah, that doesn't surprise me because that felt right. That felt good. That felt
totally
on path. Yeah. So you kind of like, yeah, I'm damn straight.
And it doesn't boost you that much, right? Like when you feel really proud of your own contribution of what you've created and you're standing in your magnificence being like, wow, I did that.
Yeah.
And someone else loves you for it. You're like, thank you.
Yeah.
There's a receptivity to that.
Yes.
Then you can receive it.
Yes.
It also doesn't inflate you.
No.
Just receive it. And it like embeds in you as gratitude rather than inflation.
Yeah.
I think there's a really big difference there.
Yeah. I agree. And I think that receivership is huge. It's Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Now, I guess the whole I'm kind of backtracking a little bit here. So
do it. Go rogue.
Go rogue, as you say. So the whole premise of this podcast is to hear people's stories of experience. So coming from experience. So how you got to where you are today. And so I would love for you to share your story. I know the last 10 months have kind of been the most pivotal for you. And I actually looked back and I had a reading with you on the 18th of October.
Wow.
Last year. Right kind of at the beginning, I'd say. I don't know if you'd agree with that.
Literally kind of, like 2 to 3 weeks into taking readings.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So that's crazy. And so I know that the last 10 months have been the pivotal shift for you and that you haven't always been the person that you are today. And no. More to the point, the 10 years prior to that have probably had just as much of an influence and an impact. So
yes,
I would love for you to just share whatever feels relevant for your experience in how you got to where you are today.
Yeah. Oh God, the story.
The story, the journey.
The journey. Okay, so the first thing that I will start with is that entrepreneurship has always ran in my blood.
Yeah.
That's been a really common thread in everything that I've ever done. Mm. I've always been obsessed with how my body works and how my mind works. And I was always obsessed with sport. Sport was life for me growing up. I grew up in a country town in regional Victoria. And like, if you didn't play sport, what did you even do? So that was life for me back then. And so it became what I centered my focus around. I actually left school when I was 17.
Rule breaker from
and the beginning. Yes, my parents were like, you will not leave. And I was like, well, I will just stop going. So yes, rebellion also runs through my blood. So I should preface with that. Mm-hmm. So I guess these things of like, there was always this need to like create my own thing. Like entrepreneurship was always something that was really strong. My dad was always an entrepreneur. I just kind of, that was the norm for me. You just, whatever you want to do, you make your own thing.
Yeah.
You just create business. And that just seemed like the natural thing for me. I think that was, without knowing it at the time, it was quite expansive for me to see that. My dad was like, oh, this is just what I want to do. So I'll just make it. I was like, okay. So,
and you said your dad was a manifester.
Yeah, dad's a manifester. Yeah. So it makes sense.
Yes.
And then my brother made his own business and, you know, manifester.
Yeah.
So I guess that was kind of where I came from. I had this entrepreneurial natural thing that I wanted to do. I also knew that what existed didn't suit me. So when I left school at 17 and I was like, I'm just not going to go. My dad was like, look, great. Okay. We'll let you do it, but you need to have something to go to. And I was like, awesome. I want enough to cover rent because I also want to move out. So I got an apprenticeship. So at the time, this was 100 years ago, you could get personal training, apprenticeships and traineeships paying $7 an hour. And I was like,
God, Brittany.
Great. I will just work a million hours and it will be fine and I will be independent.
Yeah.
And I'll have my own bit. So anyway, I did that. Mm. And I got a traineeship. I did that. And I was observing everyone that I was working with and just being like, this is boring. Mm-hmm. Like, I love this industry. I love health and fitness. I am obsessed with it. It's been the one common theme for me since I was 7. Mm. Like, health and wellness and movement is my life, but this is boring. And so I guess even from that age of 17, I was like, I like the concept, but the execution is poor.
Mm.
And so it kind of built something in me. I was like, I want to create my own thing. Yeah. So over the next few years, I had my own outdoor mobile health and fitness thing going on. It was super busy. I was, you know, having a really good time. I was learning a lot. I was changing a lot. I was, you know, studying all the things. Went to uni 100 million times, hated it all, felt stifled in a classroom.
Yeah.
And just kept coming back to a point where I actually had my own home and we purpose built the garage and I decked that out with all the fitness stuff and had a really, really rock solid business and was just thriving in that until I got to a point where I wasn't.
Yeah.
Nothing happened, nothing shifted, but I was bored.
Yeah.
I was like, this is easy now.
Mm.
I know I can create change. I'm really good at what I do. What else?
Yeah.
And so I decided to completely just shake up my whole life and decided that I was moving to Perth from regional Victoria and was just going to stop my business as of today. I'm actually going to go on a trip to New Zealand for 6 weeks. I'm going to come back. I'm going to go to Perth. I have the best bloody time. And literally did that. Yeah. Moved into a share house with my girlfriends, which I hadn't done before. Decided I didn't want to have my own business. I just wanted to have a good time and have someone else pay me for a while.
Yeah.
And I did that for about a year and I was like, okay, this having a boss thing, what was I thinking? So again, started another little business on the side, started doing more personal training, started getting to like some more interesting elements, professional athletes, high performance, junior athletes, creating academies, all of that kind of stuff. And I really recognized that everything I got within, I was like, okay, and how can I change it? Cause I'm bored.
Yeah.
That was just the theme all the time. Like, I don't want to regurgitate. I don't want to redo this. And so throughout all of that, I guess going rogue was always the theme. Like I wanted to do what I love, but I wanted to break the rules within that.
Yeah.
And then I met a guy and
the rest is history.
No. The rest is history. No, I met a guy and we recognized after not being together for a very long period of time, 6 weeks to be exact, that we were pregnant with twins.
Insane.
And this is the beginning of it all.
Yeah.
So everything before that, I mean, there's trials and tribulations and there's challenges, all the things, but like, that's just the general gist from there. However, that's when it all really began. So we were in Perth. I actually lost a lot of big contracts when I was 5 months pregnant.
Right.
And I essentially became incomeless.
Yeah.
At 5 months pregnant with twins on the way with a guy I really was just getting started with. He also then lost his job and we had just got a loan. So things went from being pretty blissful to pretty heinous pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, where my original mind stepped in.
Yeah.
This is where I think all of the stuff really started to bubble to the surface. Everything I had been executing and doing on a really low key level, originality, going rogue, you know, being within industries and systems and, you know, breaking rules and all of that kind of stuff. It really started to amplify. And I was like, you know, I'm actually really tired of someone else paying me. I'm really tired of not being able to self-generate. I'm sick of it being my energy that's on the line with my money. And I think that really catapulted something in me because I felt like everyone else was in charge of my life.
Yeah.
You know, if they wanted me, they paid me. If they didn't, I was fucked.
Yeah.
It felt like a really dire set of circumstances. So I ended up getting like these little part-time jobs. I ended up with 3 jobs, pregnant with twins, really struggling, highly stressed.
Yeah.
And then I had this memory of a friend who had started a business and I was like, oh, I'm going to call her and I'm going to do this. So 6 months pregnant, I decided to start a business. It was a multi-level marketing business. It was like, honestly, I had success in it reasonably quick and also didn't love it.
Yeah.
And so while I had kids at home, and I was grappling with this thing of like, how can I do this in my own way? How can I go rogue on this? And how can I really relate to this? And I gave it a really good 2 years of really investing myself heavily in trying lots of new things, only to get to the end of that 2 years and recognize that I actually did a lot of the same thing, just in slightly different ways.
Yeah.
And so against everyone's better judgment, I decided that I actually really needed space to explore what was mine. And I felt as though my voice had been severed through that. I felt like I was not truly owning all of my potential. I wasn't really teaching and expressing and educating on the things that like really like excited, delighted, and inspired me.
Yeah.
And so from there, I thought, you know, I need to give myself space and a buffer zone to really explore what is mine.
Yeah.
So I decided that as soon as I could save up 30 days of income, I would stop exactly what I was doing and explore something else. And I did that reasonably quick. And I thought, great, I'm going to stop everything immediately So this entire business that I have worked on for 2 years tirelessly, I'm just going to stop immediately. I'm just going to do nothing. I'm just going to see where it goes. And
which takes some serious courage, just by the way, I think.
Thank you.
And maybe also just getting to the end of your tether.
I think feeling at the end of my tether and also feeling stifled.
Yeah.
I felt like I wasn't fully me within that.
Mm.
And I think, you know, I had the rumblings of like feeling stifled and feeling restless and feeling bored and feeling like there was more. And like, I wanted to talk about things that were deeper to me and, you know, were actually more resonant for me.
Yeah.
And so throughout that 30 days, I thought, I am going to follow every curiosity, everyone, every single one. And so the very first curiosity that I followed was an Instagram post that talked about human design. And from there, I went hard and deep down a rabbit hole and I became obsessed and I was learning and I was understanding myself more deeply. And I decided overnight that I was going to completely pause everything I was doing in my life other than being energetically correct in accordance with my design and see if it made a difference. I was like, I got these 30 days. I can do what I want. Yeah. So I did that. And within 2 weeks, I was speaking at a friend's retreat about human design. It catapulted reading upon reading upon reading upon reading of human design chart, which led into human design reader training, which led into a membership, which led into a podcast, which led into programs and courses and teachings and like just thing upon thing upon thing. And it all really exploded quite quickly. And that's been my last 10 months.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, I feel as though it's been quick, but also when I reflect on everything, I was 17 when I started practicing the energetics of what I now know to be my energetic correctness. I took my first personal development course when I was 19. You know, that was 11 years ago.
Yeah.
It's been a really, it's been swift growth.
Yeah.
But it's taken me a very long time to really sink into the lessons of what's available. And so, yeah, it's been long and short.
Yeah, totally. And I think sometimes it's that back end of what happened prior to 10 months ago that people sometimes neglect to acknowledge. Like that would have been so many lesson like opportunities for you where you probably needed to feel that every single time to go, this still isn't it. And like courage in all aspects, I think, for you to actually acknowledge that even though fitness had been your passion and something you had always done and you'd created this business, but then to just go, nope, see ya.
Yeah.
Off to Perth. Like knowing that there was probably a greater good behind that, which a lot of people do not trust in. They kind of stay in that place.
Yeah. I think I've always had a natural propensity to let things go. Like, do you know what? I say this all the time. Like I am very motivated by anger and frustration.
I love it. I'm so sorry. I knew that would happen. I have two cavoodles that think they are guard dogs.
Identity crisis.
Yeah.
That's funny. So yeah, I'm very motivated by anger and frustration. Those things motivate me more than pleasantries and loveliness.
Yeah.
And when I start to feel that restless frustration of boredom or not enough, like this is not enough anymore, or I'm sick of dealing with clients like this, or these are not my people, or, you know, I'm bored with this location or like whatever, that motivates me. That is catalytic for me.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people misread that as like, there's something wrong with me emotionally, or I need to go in and do this like deep, slow process. Sometimes to me, I'm like, I just need to act and move when this catalytic energy is there.
Yeah.
And like really lean into that anger and that frustration and create. It's kind of like pandemonium, like chaos before order. It's like I get the frustration and the anger, and as soon as I like lean into that, listen in, I end up with order on the other side.
Yeah.
And of course, yes, it takes courage and it's ugly and it's so messy.
Yes.
Like it's so messy. I feel like I made my experience sound very clean, but truthfully, it is so messy. And yeah, and I think just by embracing that messiness and allowing myself to be in those that angry frustration, And knowing that it's informing me of how to move, it's not like an incorrectness of mine. It's information. I think that to me has been that that's a really big motivator.
Really big. Yeah. And I love that within you. Like I love that a lot of what drives you is that like anger, because there's so many people deny that. So many people deny it. Yeah. And if it's your truth, it's your truth. Let it be.
Well, I mean, you know, if you weren't meant to be feeling it, would you feel it?
No, probably not.
You know, right? Why the fuck else is it there?
Yeah.
It's not there just to mess with you.
Yeah.
And I say this to people all the time, like life is not here to fuck with you. It's actually here to lead you down all of the places that are for you. So if there's a feeling, there's an emotion, there's an experience there, it's because you need to experience that in order to be informed enough to address the next thing that comes along. Like if I didn't know that I was motivated by anger and I kept rejecting that, well, I'd never have a voice about anything that mattered to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's informing me always on how to move. So
yeah, I love that. I really like sometimes as well, because I think in the moment where things are hard or challenging or even exciting, like we can in the moment not fully comprehend why it's happening. And there have been times in my life where I really felt like I was in a slipstream and like I did not have a choice. And I'd love to know if you've ever experienced this, but with me studying nutrition, I got sick. I was diagnosed with PCOS and I was like, I need to see a naturopath. I don't even think I knew what a naturopath was. And yet this came into my head, like, go see a naturopath. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. And then like with Melbourne, like one day I just declared, I was like, I'm moving to Melbourne, and I just moved to Melbourne. But I really felt like in those moments, it was like this weird slipstream. It was like divine. I was like, I just need to go here and trust. But sometimes we can let logic and thoughts and people like get in the way of that. So I don't know if you've come into contact with that much, or I guess how you navigate it. Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah. And I think slipstreams occur when authenticity is at the forefront. When felt sense and intuitive acknowledgement is riding shotgun to your decisions.
Yeah.
I think when you're riding on those waves of, like I call it untouched expression.
I love that.
When the kind of the communication from your soul is coming out of you untouched by all of the ways that it can be touched, like logic and rationale and proving and, you know, will people like that, micromanaging how it's received, when we allow it to come out untouched, like from the soul straight out to the world, we allow ourselves to get in slipstreams. And the thing about life, you know, people are like, you know, if it's easy, you're doing it wrong. I fucking reject that.
Yeah.
If it's so hard, you could also be doing it wrong. Like a lot of the time we're way more attached to our struggle than we are to our expansion. And I think that trips us up hugely. Sometimes I think when you allow life to be easy, it should self-generate. It should move itself forward. Doesn't mean you're going to be free of friction, but you are going to have built up the trust that it's for you. And you're going to know that this is an expansive process of how to grow into a more full and light version of yourself.
Yeah.
Slipstreams don't exist when we're attached to our struggle. They're not there when we overly prioritize logic over how we feel.
Yeah.
You know, slipstreams don't exist there.
Yeah.
They're the byproduct of authenticity, untouched expression, originality, honoring our felt senses, you know, moving from our soul communication rather than external expectation and entitlement and all of that stuff. Yeah, I experience it a lot. And there's other slipstreams too.
Yeah.
There's really shitty ones.
Yeah.
You're floating down shit creek.
Yeah.
I think that there's so many slipstreams. You can, you know, people always say, oh, well, you know, if it's not one thing, it's the other at the moment. I'm like, yeah, you're in a slipstream of negativity because that's where you're placing your attention. You know, I think when we agree to move from our inauthenticity or our incorrectness or our logical mind, even though we're betraying our felt sense, that's how you get into other slipstreams that don't feel so good and don't end so well.
Yeah.
And totally. I think our job is to be cognizant, sensitive, and attentive enough to know when we're in flux and we're starting to move out of our slipstream so that we can do what needs to be done. A new energetic threshold, you know, Do you need to clear something else out? Do you need to remove another perpetuating behavior of worth? And then can you move back into your slipstream? Like, I think when we're more sensitive to how our life is operating, we actually do have the potential to stay in the slipstream. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And when you were saying that as well, I think there is a difference between something being hard and something being challenging, and something like you can still have ease with challenge. I think we often, you know, look at things in, you know, absolutes, or we label things as good and bad because it's easy for us to comprehend that. So we go, this is bad, therefore it's hard. Whereas no, this is actually good, but maybe there's a challenge in that. Maybe there's growth in that. Like maybe that's something to lean into.
Yeah, the gift of discernment is such a big one. Really being able to discern between what we're willing to do because we're committed to it, because we're excited about it, we're delighted by it. Like, and you know this so well. I think you see this so much in business. Business is such a great place to see this play out. When you're creating something new and it's really big and it's really scary because you've never done it before, and it takes you owning new parts of yourself and owning new parts of your voice and really standing even more in your power. That's challenging.
Oh yeah.
And it requires these new parts of you that maybe you haven't lent into super deeply before. But discernment says it's worth it. Trust this. And the alternative is not using your discernment and being like, oh, that feels a bit hard. I don't want to be uncomfortable in that. I'm going to bail. Meanwhile, missing out on the beauty at the end of that. Or there's like, I'm going to force this to happen no matter what gets in my way. And you have 857 signs popping up being like, what the fuck are you doing? And you keep going. That you're making it hard.
Yes.
You're attaching to an outcome that maybe isn't meant for you, even though you might think it is. So yeah, I think the gift of discernment there is very important.
Yeah. And I guess coming back to when you first started in your business, and like it has evolved exponentially in how you run things and how you operate. I love that like every 40 days, like you have a new price, a new offering, like an evolution of some kind. I think that is just so authentic to you.
Thank you.
But I guess when you were starting out, did you ever have any moments of doubt, or did you always kind of feel like super strong in a knowing or alignment or in a surrender, which can be hard to comprehend sometimes?
Man, that's a good question. Do you know what? I have doubted other people's receptivity to what I do. I don't think I've doubted myself very much.
Yeah.
Before this business, every day, forever. Yes. Yes. Am I ever going to make it? Is this ever going to get easier? Is this ever not going to be hard? Can I actually do anything right? That was literally my fucking tune. That could be my anthem for the previous decade. I think alignment does something to a person. I think alignment and ownership of our magnificence, our voice, our worth, our emotions, our gifts, and having them pointed out to me point blank from human design, that's been exponentially important for me to see that mirrored to me and then to see it in myself. I do have that. That is me. That was so important for building belief in myself. And I've felt so strong in my voice since landing in that alignment. No longer doing things because it could lead somewhere. Like just fucking that whole concept off entirely. You know, like, oh, I should network. Oh, I should go to that thing. Or I should tell people about what I do. Like literally letting every single thing go and saying, I will only speak when I feel like it's good and right, when it's ripe and ready to come out, when I feel like I can't not say it, when I care so deeply that it like twists me up on the inside. Like really committing to just letting my felt sense rule me entirely. I have not once doubted myself, like my identity, who I am. Not once.
Amazing. I want more people to feel that. I personally want to feel that because I can just see in you. And I think because I started experiencing you somewhat from the very early stages. Mm. In the beginning, yeah, I have just seen you go from strength to strength in your voice, in your conviction, like even in your presence, like in your demeanor. Like you can see that that really radiates outwards, and it's hard to miss. Like you can't.
Thank you. That is like the greatest compliment ever.
But it's like awesome, and I think for me, why I wanted to have you on is because you have been such a, as Lacey Phillips would say, an expander. For me, like you have, like, I remember when I heard your story for the first time, I got goosebumps because I was like, fuck, that can happen. Everyone tells you it's hard and it takes time to build a business and there's this and there's that. And like, you get so attached to that and you get so, that becomes so embedded within you.
Yeah.
And so I love that you're kind of saying, well, no, fuck that off. Doesn't have to be the way.
I genuinely believe it so much. Mm. I think the thing that so many people miss, that I missed for a decade, like for so long, is that you're never going to have success in things that are not for you.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter how much attentiveness and sensitivity and conviction and power you might embed in your work if it's not for you. And we have to be courageous enough to let the shit go that isn't for us. Now, there might be a lag. You might feel good working in that for a while, but there's going to come a time where you feel defeated and bored and restless. And I am just not a proponent for supporting people in doing that.
Mm.
I don't think you need to stick it out in the shit to have success. Yeah. I think it should feel lush. I think creating the business of your dreams should feel like a dream.
Yeah.
I think it should feel like the thing that you have on your vision board.
Mm.
I don't have one, but most people do. I think it should feel how your body wants it to feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I really tune into myself, I'm like, I know I'm here for impact. And it feels even a little uncomfortable still to own that about myself. Mm. I know I'm here for influence. I know one of my personal laws is I'm here to awaken people into new states of being.
Yeah.
And that might provoke them a little bit. And that might be a little bit triggering. And I fully fucking own that about myself. And I allow myself to lean into that. But I think so much of the time we're so stuck in like, it needs to be hard. And therefore when it's hard, I'm doing it right. And it actually just like literally drains the clock.
Yeah.
And you know, if you want swift success, it requires radical self-honesty, like absolutely epic amounts of courage, like real conviction, you know, really willing to pluck some shit out that may feel very scary.
And commitment.
I've just pulled the pin on a membership that I had that was meant to run for 12 months and I've run for 8 because it just doesn't feel aligned. And it's so hilarious that as soon as that is plucked and I have compassionately and lovingly told the people, you know, this is removing and here's what I'm going to do for you to make this better. As soon as we pluck that, things start to fall in that are for us because it rewards consistent radical honesty.
Yeah.
And so I think when I can continue showing the macro, the collective, the world, the universe, spirit, whoever the fuck.
Yeah.
That on the micro, I'm willing to move mountains to make sure that I'm going to continue being myself through it all.
Mm.
I think that amazing things happen. And it's so funny because the home of our dreams became available within 20 minutes of me pulling that.
Yeah.
And I've just had the most miraculous idea that I've been trying to download and pull through for like a month.
Yeah.
And it all happens when you create space and you just continue showing the message that I will be me. Regardless, I will be me regardless.
Yeah.
You know, I think that is just the most important thing, but so many people will stick things out for so fucking long. And usually because they have an achievement motivation, they're motivated by this thing at the end of the road and they're willing for the road to be shitty and bumpy and awful.
Yeah.
I want the road to feel lush.
Mm.
Like I want the whole thing to be nourishing.
Yeah.
Not just the end goal. And I think we have a work backwards mentality when it comes to a lot of business and a lot of career and stuff.
Yeah.
I have a move forwards mentality and I think that that's really different.
Which you'd think that that's like, well, duh.
You think like that makes sense, but it doesn't.
Right?
Yeah. So people go, well, how do I do that?
Totally. Yeah. I know. Because I'm glad that you brought up achievement motivation. And I know you kind of touched on that, but talk to us about your alternative to that.
Alignment motivation.
Yeah.
Yes. So yeah. I think that achievement motivation is when you have an idea in your head of what you think is in alignment with who you are right now. And so then you think that is the thing that you want to achieve. So you might put that way out on a pedestal. That's what I want. That's my achievement. But that's predicated on you being exactly who you are right now. Mm. That the person that you are right now will still want that when you get there.
Yeah.
So we have this kind of, this is what I want out there. And I'm going to move backwards to make that happen from here. And to me, that's just counterintuitive. It's like you're walking the same path twice, but you're doing it in reverse. It's just a weird concept to me.
Yeah.
For me, I choose alignment motivation.
Yeah.
So the belief with alignment motivation is that if I land here in this present moment, right now, right here, and I slay this moment with the utmost integrity, authenticity, truth, energetic awareness, then my true and correct and aligned path will automatically unravel like a big, delicious surprise and delight, magical ride of my fucking life.
Yeah.
And that thing that was positioned at the same place as your achievement motivation is going to look completely different because you have morphed, transformed, and mutated 457 times before you get there, and you are a different person with different needs. I think when we have achievement motivation, we are obsessed with who we think we're going to be. And I ask people this all the time, from January the 1st this year to today, have you changed? Has one of your perspectives, your ideologies, your beliefs, your behaviors, your traits, has it changed at all? And 100% of people say yes.
Mm.
And I think, okay, it's currently August of the same year. How the fuck do you think you're going to know who you are?
Yeah.
Way down there.
Mm.
And so I choose to be like, I know what's going to unfold as it's meant to if I nail my alignment right now. So I choose alignment motivation. I choose to be aligned and motivated right now in this moment by what is true and correct and good for me presently.
Yeah.
And trust that what is good and right for me and what I'm here to do is going to unravel.
Yeah.
That's never led me astray at this point.
Yeah, I know. And I think with that notion of achievement motivation, there's also this attachment, I believe, to being happy when that is fulfilled.
When I, yeah.
Yeah. Instead of being in that alignment that you're talking about and having joy and happiness, prosperity, abundance, growth in the moment. It's like we literally cock block ourselves from having that in the now because we're trying to strive for it in the future.
100%. I honestly believe we have this idea that it's going to be terrible, 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 brilliant.
Great. We're here.
Like I'm going to travel along this path and I'm willing for it to be shit and it's so hard and look at me go and I'm working on a Sunday and like look at me doing the things and I'm like proving myself to the world.
Yeah.
And it feels like shit.
Yeah.
And then one day
it'll all make
sense. All of this magical stuff is going to rain down upon me and I'm going to land in this place that feels lush.
Mm.
And so in the meantime, we're actually willing to sacrifice happiness, prosperity, joy, delight. I am not willing to do that.
Mm-mm.
That is something I'm not willing to give up. And so I think it's an extremely backwards concept.
It is.
To me. And it does work for some people and that is all good.
Mm.
My method is different.
Yeah.
And I believe that with every iteration of you, with every metamorphosis, with every little tiny piece of growth that you get from presently making aligned decisions, because you will grow every single little tweak, every one of those new frequencies that you land on calls in a higher state of joy, abundance, prosperity, love, connection, opportunity.
Yeah.
So you get the experience of subtly and beautifully growing and expanding at every single iteration of you, or you can prolong it completely until you get to this magical point where it's meant to turn great.
Mm.
I choose subtle, beautiful expansions along the way.
Yeah.
And having my future already there for me, waiting because I know I'm going to remain in my highest integrity. I'm never going to sacrifice my alignment.
Yeah.
I know that beautiful things happen there. I don't think beautiful things happen in authenticity.
Mm.
you know, and pushing shit uphill. I just don't. Yeah. So yeah, it's a really interesting concept. A lot of people are a bit like, huh, moving forwards.
Interesting.
Fascinating. Yeah. Not heard that one. So yeah, that's the theory. And yeah. That's just after being an achievement motivation person for most of my life
mm-hmm.
and turning into an alignment motivation person
yeah.
and having that work out a hell of a lot better and that. Seeing that in hundreds and hundreds of clients as well when they start yeah. to shift their perspective. Again, though, there has to be radical self-honesty and yet you actually have to be willing to do it.
Yeah, a willingness and awareness. And as you say, like, applied knowledge, like beyond knowledge. Just knowing, yep. but that applied level of knowledge too.
Yep, 100%.
I would love to kind of end on energetics because I know that you've kind of expanded to energetics in enterprise. I'm doing Going Rogue, your latest program with you, and that has just blown my freaking mind. and I think energetics can be something that we often disregard. We don't think yep. of, or we reserve it for the woo-woo people. And it's just so... not that. I feel like it's basic and it's fundamental and it's things that we should
mm-hmm.
kind of know throughout our whole life. And I know we've touched on it in Notions, but
yep.
I'd love for you to talk on it in terms of enterprise and then perhaps we can riff on it a little bit in terms of health because I know it's something that we kind of agree that there's a synergy there in alignment and authenticity and how that trickles through all aspects of life. But let's dive in with enterprise first and foremost with energetics.
Okay. So my belief is that well, it's not a belief, it's a fucking fact. The fact is that yeah. everything's energy.
100%.
And we know this. So, yeah. you know, what we can see with the physical form is like our actual physical human bodies. But this is where all of our little cells and molecules and atoms are so tightly packed that we form a physical body. But we actually extend way beyond that.
Yeah.
So our, what we call aura or our electromagnetic field or just ourself beyond what we can see, whatever, we ripple out and we carry with us a frequency. And whatever the consistent message that we are sending to the macro is, that is the frequency that we're sending out to the world. And we get to attract in the things that are equal to that. So when we understand that notion and we apply that to business, we can relate to our businesses and energetically rise in frequency so that we can attract in the things that are more in alignment with what we actually want. So our businesses, for example, are also another entity. Yeah. We are not our businesses. They are a separate entity. And like a relationship, we're learning how to relate to them. We're learning how to connect with them. And, you know, similar to what we were talking about before with the spleen, the essence or the entity of your business has a heartbeat. It has a spleen. It has a, you know, energetically, of course.
Yeah.
But when I look to my business, I can see it with a critical eye and I can say, okay, what is the business in need of getting rid of? What does it need to take in more of? Where is it limited with its capacity to become more bold, to become more courageous? Where is it holding back with the solar plexus? Where is it not in its worth? Where is it not demanding what it is worth?
Yeah.
You know, and we can start relating to it like that. You know, and when we do that, when we align, when it aligns, when we start relating to it in a really beautiful energetic capacity, we have the actual capacity to pull in things that are at a higher frequency.
Yeah.
Thus calling in more abundance, prosperity, success, ease. And my belief is that all things, people and businesses that are expressive, untouched and expressive, authentic, original, will create a self-generated impetus, meaning that they will self-sustain. They will self-generate. We can kind of lose the notion of this excessive marketing and excessive branding and excessive salesing and pushing and all of the things. And we can actually release all of that and we can allow it to self-generate.
Yeah.
And that's really the belief. So everything that I create in business is about aligning myself energetically.
Yeah.
Aligning my business energetically, building a beautiful relationship between me and it.
Yeah.
Calling in things that are at a higher frequency and allowing it to self-generate and self-sustain so that I can create more balance. I can have more rest. I can have a life outside of my business. I can breathe, I can be with my family, I can be with my friends, I can go for walks in the middle of the day. It creates a whole ripple effect. The other belief is that that automatic impetus that it creates and that self-generative nature the business can have is that that also includes your impact and your influence.
Yeah.
We talk about creating impact and creating influence, but actually it's a natural and organic byproduct of your correctness in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to go and boost my posts to gain more impact. I can allow it to sit and be received, and I can allow it to naturally ripple out and affect people organically. I've never once said, hey, can you share my post? But 100 people will.
Yeah.
And it generates. We end up having our frequency actually become more broad and more expansive and more big, and then we can magnetize more and we have more of a ripple effect of impact and influence. And so really we're just trying to get ourselves and our enterprises into a place where they can self-generate.
Yeah.
They can self-sustain.
Yeah. And I feel like you touched on a good point there. It's like the self and then there's the business. And I was talking to Jason about this the other day and he was like, you and the business are one. I feel like this is a problem. Like there's not enough separation
here. Some
yes, which is a default, might I add. But I think as someone that's like a solopreneur or someone that does have their own business, it can be really hard to create that distinction, but it is important. I guess
what would
you suggest in terms of that? Like just first creating that separation or distinction.
Understanding that. Knowing it, understanding the energetics of that and seeing how enmeshment, like where do you see in the world that enmeshment is good? Mm. Where do you see in the world that codependency is good? It's not. And when you believe that you are the business, there's a pressure there.
Yes.
Notice that when you think you're your business, you're like, fuck, what am I going to create next? How am I going to do this? And like we start not relating to it. We start being it and we actually bypass the fact that it's a thing.
Yeah.
When I can tune in and listen to the message coming from my business, and it's like, you know, maybe I'm applying too much attention onto one part of it and these other parts feel starved. Mm. When I can start seeing it like a world or like an ecology, and it's my job to keep it thriving and flourishing, and, you know, I want the birds chirping and I want the trees growing and I want the, you know, I want the tides to be moving in the right way. Like I want to manage all of that. So I have to limit the amount of rubbish going towards it.
Mm.
It's like an environmental and sustainability issue relating to your enterprise.
Yeah.
And so when I can understand that my relationship with it is the only source of its nourishment, kind of like it's like the umbilical cord.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's getting served by, I'm the mother.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really nourishing it and it's going to be a direct representation of how nourished I am.
Yeah.
And you know, I had twins. You don't want one twin having more than the other. You want to make sure that all of your services and your offerings and your creations and the things that are in there are being nourished in the way that they're calling to be nourished.
Yeah.
So I think understanding that concept, which not a lot of people do, they say you are your brand. It's like, well, no, I own my own Instagram account. That's not the same as me having a different entity of a business. Like, yes, I can go and be me on Instagram.
Totally.
Of course I can. That's a touch point for people to access me. And they know, and you know, they can then go and access me through the world of my business. It's also like, it's like the bouncer at the door before they get in.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a beautiful mediation between me and the people coming into the world of my business. So I think understanding it and people creating that separation and knowing that if they don't have an idea right now, it's all good. Your business is going to like be there.
Yeah.
And it's going to communicate with you and it's going to drop an idea in when it's good and ready and when there's space. And
Yeah. Oh man, I'm never not learning from you. That's another little bit of wisdom for you. What day is it? Wednesday.
I'm so glad.
Oh, you're a magic woman. I am so grateful to have had this epic conversation with you today. I could chat to you forever.
It's been so fun.
It's been awesome. I'd love
Thank you for giving me a voice.
Oh,
all of this stuff.
Gosh, my pleasure. I will link to some podcasts that you've been on and some that are even on your own podcast, just to give people background on human design, because we definitely didn't go into it, but there's so many places for that.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we can talk about some of this other stuff that I know is so integral to who you are.
Yes. Thank you so much.
But if you just want to share where people can find you, how they can work with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can find me on Instagram at I am Brittany Eastman.
Yeah.
I literally only play there, so just go there. Yep. and then my website's brittanyeastman.com, and that's got all my stuff on it. So there are a few ways to work with me. We have the HD Co, where you can come and get a human design reading, and all the info is on there if people want to actually learn about the basics of human design and stuff. I have Going Rogue, which is a beautiful kind of, how would you describe it? Bloody hell, I don't even know.
It's just epic.
It's a portal to another land.
It is. And a great community space too. I know there's not like community interaction, but when we get on those live calls, it's just like the energy is just like,
it's so fucking lit. So it's about conscious enterprise and how to energetically engage with it. All of the concepts that we're talking about today are like
pretty much
the foundations of it. It's called Going Rogue. It's about how to break the rules in traditional business and write your own and create magical businesses where you can get in the slipstream of your own prosperity and greatness.
Yeah.
I've got human design reader training where you learn how to actually be a human design reader. It's very, very comprehensive. There's so much content in there. And I have one more offering. It's called an enterprise exploration. And this is the only way to currently work with me one-on-one, although that will be changing.
I was going to say something to look forward to coming up. So that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. It's been awesome.
You're the best.
Bye. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. I hope you got something magical out of this episode today. If you want to keep the conversation flowing, head over to the gram. You can find me at annalise.madrell, or stay up to date with the latest podcast episodes at Coming From Experience, all one word. Be sure to share this podcast with a special someone who you think might gain a lot out of this conversation, and be sure to leave a review and let me know what you think. Until next time.